Have you ever wondered why it is that we do what we do and who we do it with? Then this is a podcast for you, an exploration of human beings through systemic psychology and Unani biotypes with Rodrigo Garcia Plates, Ross Everett, and Brian McElhaney. This is Biotypical.
Wow, you guys, what a live event that was that we just did 2 days ago or yesterday. Oh my God.
Dude, it was yesterday.
I cannot believe it went so well.
I know it feels like it's 2 days from now, but it was yesterday.
So great to meet you all in person. Thank you all. I mean, the amount of nudity that happened was unsuspected. But
I'm so sorry that Dale Thorhammer got so drunk.
Yeah, that guy did a number on me. I mean, the police had to come and escort him out of the building. I hope he's okay.
I'm pretty sure he has like connections.
I mean, according to him, I'm sure. But it's just like that was, and we need to apologize to all the ethnic groups that he started just listing.
Yeah, what were they again? Do you remember, Ross?
You know what? I don't even want to re-say
starting
them.
With every Swahili person in the world. We are so sorry.
The worst part was that he tried to do their languages, but with clearly no understanding of what their languages are. It was really offensive. So we need to apologize on behalf of Biotypical for even having him there. But it was great.
Are we recording already?
Yeah, dude, we're 15 minutes into this episode already. Malik says, "I can't believe Batoon landed that double backflip." She's been practicing that.
I mean, that's barely a joke. It might happen.
Yeah.
Okay, for a casual listener, why are we talking in the past? The tense of an event that hasn't happened yet.
Because we're recording this on Thursday, it happens on Saturday, and this comes out on Sunday.
Oh, that's why.
Yeah.
Then it was amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah, and thank you all for coming out. Those of you who came out, those of you who missed it, if you are a patron, you might be seeing some clips of that coming out around Christmas. Patrons, listeners, lend me your ears. Welcome. Welcome to Biotypical. The final episode of October. Ooh, spooky. What are you going to be for Halloween, Rodrigo?
I'm going to dress up like the Cookie Monster.
That's not what your wife said.
And I just
did that
found
not
out
sound like an
that
insult?
Sounded terrible. That sounded so terrible. That's gonna get your face like reshaped in the right country.
No, she said you're gonna be Gomez Adams.
Oh, you're right. Well, here's the thing.
Okay.
Like Halloween's, as you very well know with my wife, mean two, three different costumes and two, three yes. different events. So yes, in one of them, I'm going to be that Gomez guy from the Addams Family.
Yeah.
She even got me a hand.
Yeah. You know, I we were discussing Halloween costumes and I realized that there's differences between the Spanish version of the Addams Family and for us because the hand, what do you call the hand? What's the name of the character?
I think it's dedos. You're right. I think we call it dedos in Spanish.
It was also like a year ago that we were dressed in costumes at Dia de los Muertos.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and yes.
Everyone was Squid Game. Everyone was Squid Game.
And a couple of days before, like Roz and I were dressed as Jurassic Park, like park rangers.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that. Oh, that's right. I saw photos of that.
But. And Santi was a dinosaur, right?
Santi was a baby dinosaur, my kid.
Oh, that's adorable.
And then El Chavo del Ocho. Which,
you're right.
Mm-hmm.
I was Kiko.
And I was
Don Ramon.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And Santi was El Chavo. Yeah. Oh my God, my kid is two and he has had like so many costumes.
Yeah. You're going to have a lot of photos. I was talking to my sister about this because when I was growing up, my dad had a film camera and then they developed film and then they just put the photos into either envelopes or scrapbooks. But your kid's not going to have physical photos. It's just all on your iCloud. So
everything
I told my
digital,
sister
yeah.
to get a hard drive and drag her favorites over so that she could store them on a hard drive that they can be really easily accessed.
That's literally what we have.
Yeah. Just
that's the stuff that we have. And my kid like looks at my wife every once in a while and says, "Fotos, fotos," which means pictures, pictures. And he just wants to go through his pictures on the phone.
Yeah.
I love photo albums though. I feel like that should be like curated tangible albums are the best.
Yeah,
but I guess they're gone. They're gone.
No, they're, Facebook does them. It sets it to music and it goes,
it's not the same.
It's not the same at all.
Having the old thing in your hands, and they were always like messy. And remember that they had this like sticky strips to hold the picture and then the plastic on top of them.
I love opening up those big leather-bound photo albums and just flipping through and like seeing pictures of like my parents, my grandparents in France. Okay. Teresa says she still uses film. The melancholics are arguing that this still
exists. Yeah, the melancholics are going crazy in the chat. We're sorry, melancholics.
Yeah. They're like, no, I still use Polaroid. Are you guys ready to dive into some questions?
Polaroid's great. Yeah, let's do it.
Let's see. I'm going to give you guys an option. A lot of stuff about cholerics and false fires today.
Oh.
Which is interesting. All right. I'm going to start with this one because this is, I think, a good launching point. This one comes from our dear friend Reed, who says, what do you think are the best ways to increase participation in therapy for conservative-minded people? And what would you say to conservatives who might be turned off by liberal therapists?
Yeah, this is interesting. Because I feel like it's more of a liberal mindset to do therapy in general.
We talked about this a little earlier about what's the difference that you see mainly between conservative ideologies and more progressive ideologies. And it was the scarcity mindset.
Yep.
Is way more common in conservative ideologies. But when it comes to mental health...
When it comes to mental health and therapy, I think it's about how do you make it fashionable on both sides? Because on the left, therapy is fashionable.
Mm-hmm.
On the right, it's not.
Right.
And I feel like the only way you could make therapy fashionable on the right would be if therapy was seen as something that brings you back to your values and to family values and to like understanding the role of genders within cultures, et cetera, et cetera. And there's a lot of conservative therapists out there that actually do believe that.
Well, I'm thinking of Jordan Peterson, who the left hates.
Yes.
And I don't know if the right love, it kind of feels like this man's an island where it's like the only people that like really love him are almost feel libertarian to me.
Yeah. What I think is that it's a little bit crazy because people on the left hate Jordan Peterson because they assume that everybody listening to him is someone that's extremely right wing and extremely conservative. And it's all men from the right that listen to him, which is what they usually say. But the truth is that people listening are more, I feel like, from pretty much every side of the spectrum. I would say more center and like a little bit right. Not because he's a conservative, but because he has conservative values when it comes to family roles and what it means to be a father and what it means to be a mother. And I know how hard it is for someone who's gender fluid and for anyone in that like progressive community, of course, listening to these things can be challenging. But when you understand that what he's talking about is the development of children and the type of context, like the space that we create for children to grow up in and the symbols that they need in order to understand life, et cetera, then it totally makes sense. I don't even think that he's that conservative. I just think that he's older. So
I don't think he's that conservative either.
Yeah. I don't think he's that conservative, but I do think he is like inclined to argue and like go for like things that are like in his mind correct. And I think in doing so, the people that challenge him the most tend to be on the left, which digs his heels in deeper to like, I wouldn't even call it right-leaning point of view, but I would say contrarian to the left point of view that's being presented with emotional logic. And that's the difficulty because we talked about his bio type on the podcast. I think we settled we can't figure out if he's melancholic or choleric.
I think he's a melancholic with a strong choleric subdominant.
Really? You've always said choleric.
No, he's always said melancholic. I'm pretty sure if you go back and check the tapes, Brian,
I'm positive it was a choleric at the beginning.
You sure? Because you would have been very
At the very
proud.
Beginning, we thought he was choleric. And then we settled on melancholic with a strong choleric subdominant.
Interesting.
And I thought he was choleric. Just looking at him right now, I thought he was choleric. But when we started looking at pictures of him when he was younger, I was like, okay, melancholic with a controlling personality and very powerful subdominant.
Interesting. Because his approach of thoughts, I don't think he thinks other people are stupid. He's just more like, I want this to be correct. And he struggles. Well, I have seen him lose his cool in interviews by being like, he loses Many control times. Of his anger. Like Many it does times. Show up in anger, and it gets difficult.
Yeah, that's why I was thinking the anger is just so strong.
Jasmine asks, is it fair to say he cries too much to be choleric? Or at least it would be odd in the context that he does it in.
I understand why and how he cries. Like when he cries, it's always out of like either this compassion / frustration of seeing people live in a certain way. And I completely understand them because I cry talking about those things all the time myself too. It has to do with the amount, like when you're in the line of work that we're in, and you see the amount of people that we see doing like weird things to themselves. At some point when you talk about it, of course it breaks your heart. But yeah, if he were choleric, no matter how sensitive he were, I think it would be difficult for him to be able to that open emotionally.
Interesting.
So he's my biotype. I'm like him, is what we're saying. Yeah. I'm exactly like him in every way.
Yeah, identical. With way more mom.
Well, to go back to Reed's question, because I'm wondering, like, it, you know, the conservative mindset is that, because there's also people I know who are on the left that are like not into therapy. I wonder if it even has to do with like right. Yeah. I mean, I think it's like some people are just like against the concept. I have friends who are like, no, that's not, not for me. I will not. It's just the concept. I'm not even.
For real?
And it's, oh, yeah. Oh, definitely.
I thought everybody on the left was into therapy.
No, you kidding? No. Some of them like are like, no, I do ayahuasca. I don't need therapy.
Oh, well.
Like, okay. Well, like I don't know some if of those them are your people.
No, I know some people that are just sort of like, no, I don't need it. That's it's kind of weird. I don't want people to go in, dig deep. I'm doing great. It's like, well, I wonder your partner if doesn't think so, but.
Here's a question. Because this question, I'm wondering if there's a false premise to this question. And if this is more of a, I have a specific person and this is the belief that I have about why they're avoiding therapy based off of what they've said.
That's very possible.
But because I don't know if there's a slant about like conservatives versus liberals. I don't know if this is a politics thing versus, we've talked about the horseshoe theory before on this podcast.
Yes.
Yeah. That the far left and the far right are more, not ideologically, but like the way in which they're
every time you have every time you have a linear measurement of people leaning towards one side or the other, where they seem to oppose each other, if you actually pay attention to the human qualities that people portray as they move away from each other, the human qualities are more similar than the content of what they say. So someone who's fundamentally to the right and someone who's fundamentally to the left are more similar than people that are centrists because they're fundamental, no matter
That's
what they
the word.
Say.
So I think it's not about conservative and liberal. I think it's about fundamentalism.
Yes.
And I think it's harder to get people who are fundamental into therapy because therapy is all about challenging your beliefs.
You have to be open. You have to be open to do it.
There's a degree of openness that you need to be able to have to see the world in a different way because breakthroughs come from seeing things that you didn't see before that changes the way in which your perspective. And imagine having built your entire identity or elements of your identity around a fundamental point of view, the threat of therapy is so big that even on a subconscious level, you could say anything to be like, I'm not going to go there. I don't want to go look at myself in that way.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
hypnotism is similar.
Is.
You gotta be open to it.
You have to be open to it. That's why you are the best. You are the most open.
On stage on Vegas, that's how they described it. They're like, if you want to prove me wrong that I can't hypnotize you, you're going to win. Like you have to want to do it to do it. And you have to like feel comfortable enough to be like, he's like, most people feel like I'm strong. I can't be hypnotized. No, that's please. That's like for weak people, not me. And if that's your mindset, it's not going to happen. But, it's a little bit of a tangent from therapy, but there's something to the idea.
That's
of like,
how sex should be.
That's how sex should be.
Yeah. Wait, what do you mean? That's how sex should be.
Like
you should hypnotize people to have sex with them. Rodrigo said it. That's what he said. Podcast
oh God,
over,
Brian.
You said it with your words that explicitly.
I think I know why you hate Dale because you are him a little bit.
Oh God,
no,
yes.
I'm not.
Well, the trick that you pulled just now—that was very Dale Thorhammer.
That was a little Dale, but that was a joke. We all laughed.
I know.
Back to Brian.
I can't believe Dale had such an impact on your life. I'll have to tell him. Okay,
he didn't.
Rodrigo,
you both are unbearable.
back to how to hypnotize people into having sex. Potential name for the episode.
Yeah.
I did not say anything about hypnotizing people to have sex with them. What I said is,
he said it right there. So Dan, you can go ahead and edit
just
that.
Take that and just flip that over
and over. Don't chop up what I'm saying. Okay. So what I'm trying to say is this, wouldn't it be a perfect world if in order to have sex, you could tell people, if you don't want to have sex with me, you'll win. Like you really need to want it for anything to work.
You don't want to have sex with me, you'll win.
Wouldn't that be the perfect world?
But here's the thing. Like, that's consent.
But imagine if it's enthusiastic
consent.
Imagine if I didn't get your consent and therefore nothing could work.
Yeah.
Yeah. That would be fantastic.
It just wouldn't work at all. It just couldn't happen.
Exactly.
But honestly, I think saying that to someone would unlock a part of their brain that goes, what do you mean? Well, like.
Depends on the person.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to be like, do want it.
Yeah.
Well, you could convince someone that if you don't work, it's because they don't really want it.
But when you say it like that, that sounds like gaslighting someone into.
Now we're actually entering that territory. Yeah, yeah. What we were making fun of before.
Yeah, I'm sorry, my penis didn't work. I guess you didn't want this bad enough.
But
let's go back to Reed's question.
I think if we just make it in general, like how do
Reed? I can't believe you would ask us a question that would go down this rabbit hole like this. How could you do this to this podcast?
As soon as I heard the question, I was like, this question is going to be the whole episode.
Well, it's not the whole episode. We've got a lot of other good ones in the
camp. How do you, in general, when the people are resistant to therapy, I mean, there's many reasons why they could. I guess figure out why. Like, what is it exactly that they're resisting? Because I feel like there may be different reasons why people would say no to it and then speak to that. But in general, have you dealt with this as a therapist, Rodrigo?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Like, all the time. Because the problem is, okay, they might be afraid of different things. But the truth is that most people are afraid of therapy because of one very specific thing. Most people believe that if anyone else could like knew their secrets and understood what's wrong with them, no one would ever love them and they wouldn't have the ability to fix it. So it's like feeling like you have this deep secret. Well, we've all had this experience. Like when you did something wrong as a kid and you thought that it was unfixable and that like if your parents found out or your friends found out, like you'd be in trouble. It's the adult version of that. So as an adult, you've become really good at handling your secrets, your pain, your trauma, your emotions, while upkeeping this image of yourself. And the therapist is the person that's going to look behind that veil. And people honestly think that if anyone saw the darkness behind that, no one would ever love them, choose them, or stay with them. That's why people are afraid of therapy. And if I'm completely honest, so many times in my life, I would give my right arm just to forget everything that I've worked on in myself and get that feeling, that first rush of feeling like something makes sense about who you are and putting the pieces together. That's one of the most amazing feelings in the world.
That's how I felt learning about phlegmatics.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I fell in love with biotypes, because it gave me that as a sanguine too. And the amount of people that I'm able to free. I just did this yesterday in the bank.
At the bank?
Yes, I went to the bank yesterday, and I needed a document, something in my bank account had a wrong address. And so as I was doing that, at the beginning, they told me like, no, there's nothing we can do. Handle it through your app. And I was like, but I really need the sheet of paper and like the actual paper that has this address on it. And this really nice girl, this really nice melancholic came out and she was like, okay, I can help you. Come here. So I went there. She was Latina. And we started talking. Then I started talking in Spanish. She was a little bit surprised by it. And she was like, you don't look Latino. And I'm like, yes, I am. And we just started talking and talking. And I just started talking about her biotype and being a melancholic and how like melancholics are not that common between the Latino community. And in the middle of it, she went from, I'm a melancholic who's not understanding what you're talking about, to, okay, so the way I work is normal. Okay, so who I am is okay. And I just love when people have that experience of feeling seen, like really feeling seen. And she's probably listening to us right now.
Hey, it's like you know what's great is melancholics in service industries when you read their biotype. Because every time that we've done it, which is the Apple Store, that was the first time. That guy screamed and hid under a table, which was incredible. Then at the VinFast.
yes, showroom. That was so fun.
Like, just fry that guy. And now at the bank. So, Melancholics and Service Industries, we've got a gift for you.
But I love how people feel seen.
I want to take this moment to point out that our Instagram right now is en fuego. We've got new posts coming out, and there's one that's going to be coming out. It'll be up by the time you listen to this. But the number one question that we get is, what biotype should I be with? And
yep.
We are creating content on there that's like, hey, if you're a phlegmatic, find yourself a partner who, and then listing out the things.
That was a good post.
Oh, yeah. It was very well received. So more content like that. And then also shout out to Dania, who is putting together posts of how to create your bank heist team by biotype.
We love you, D.
I know.
Let's start calling her D. I love D.
Let me go back to Reed real quick. Reed, did we answer your question? Whenever somebody asks a broad question like this, I'm like, it's not a broad question. It's a real thing that's going on. So let's hear what's actually going on.
If you feel comfortable.
Sorry, I'm in the car.
I knew it. He's in the car. Okay, hello, Reed.
Hello.
What up, dude?
So do you want to elaborate on this question a little bit?
Hello, Reed.
Reed's always in the car. I love
it. Always. I think he lives in his car.
You don't need to be on camera. It is an audio platform.
I always say yes. Can you hear me okay?
We can hear you great. Just stop looking at us. Okay, look how fast he's going. We can see the trees flying. Stop looking at us. I saw the road. He keeps looking at us. Reed, stop.
It's a cool shot.
So don't worry.
No, the car's driving itself. We're okay.
Okay. So elaborate for us.
I was wondering, like, Rodrigo, you answered it initially, like making it fashionable, but I guess like, and I have, you know, I've read about like conservative therapists and how they're appealing to those people. But I guess like what is like, you know, what is making it fashionable? Like, what does that look like in the real world?
What does it look like in the real world? I'll translate through this bionic
version. Oh, I thought he meant the real world.
Sorry, I'm out in the country.
Yeah.
Bad service.
That's okay. I get the question. It makes sense.
Okay, great.
So making something fashionable has to do with someone creating results that line up with the value system of that community. That's how something becomes fashionable. Like, you need someone to create results that line up with the things that people are looking for. Like, in this case, if the family unit is extremely important, if someone within the community goes to therapy and saves their marriage, if someone within the community goes to therapy and creates a connection with their son or daughter that no one else in the community is knowing, like, how to create, if someone in the community starts healing certain things about their lives that the community really cares about, then that will become fashionable immediately. The problem with this is that you can't really make someone grow in one specific arena without that impacting so many other areas of their life that won't be fashionable for that community. In other words, like, if someone is really working on themselves and they finally find a way to say I love you to their wife or their husband and to open up emotionally and to have a deep conversation, you're going to work on their compassion. And it's the only way that they'll be able to do that. And then what will happen is that they'll meet someone from the the wrong side of their ethnicity, their political views, whatever that is, and they'll have compassion for that human being too. And the community will not like that. That's the problem. So, like, the right side has very specific views on who you should have compassion for, how you should react to different things, especially in far right places. And if you give one of them compassion, they'll choose out of that. They'll immediately choose out of that. Like, those views will not make sense. They just won't hold water anymore. That's the problem. That when someone from the far left or the far right or any far, like, extremist fundamental point of view, if they start going to therapy, they'll stop being fundamental. Like, immediately. As soon as they have a breakthrough, they'll stop being fundamental. So when you see people from those arenas going to therapy, they stop being fundamental about their views, and we get them out of that space. So it's hard to make therapy fashionable for people on that extreme point.
That's crazy. That's amazing. Yeah, you can't be fundamental anymore when you go to therapy. If you love having fundamentalist views, unless it transposes to then being fundamentalist about therapy and wellness. I feel like it can then become
which we've absolutely seen. I mean, like you see that all the time with people that's like whatever they find their medicine to be, they become fun. I can't tell you how many times my friends have been like, Ross, you need to go to Vipassana. You need to go to this silent meditation retreat. This is amazing. And then I'm like, no, you need to go to MITT. You need to take biotech. And we're all just telling other people what they need because we become fundamental about it.
I think people just need me. Is that a problem?
Yeah, but not for the same reasons. Oh. I see Reed talking, but we don't hear him.
Oh, yeah, Reed, you're muted.
Sorry. In terms of like the... I think because I like a month ago, I asked about like, what are the beliefs that lead to conservative ideologies? And you said something like, it's like when people feel like things are done to them is how I guess they interpret in their head. And so how is therapy almost like kind of like what you said, like, this is someone like I need to be on guard because this is someone who could do something to me. They could like get behind my layers. Is that an accurate way of looking at it?
Let's correct it real quick, because that's not just conservative of something could be done to me or this is being done to me. That's a fundamental. Yeah. If we're talking about the horseshoe theory, that exists on the far left and the far right.
Yeah. Really progressive people are literally fighting like everyone else who doesn't think like them, who doesn't agree with them, and who might hurt them in a way. So when you become fundamental about any view, like becoming fundamental means la otredad, like making people other, like the otherhood, like outside of you, like they're not like you, they're not a part of you, they don't care about the things that you care about, and that makes people fundamental. The huge difference is an individual freedom when it comes to like the way you understand it politically in the States, that On the far right, individual freedom and individuality is extremely important. And on the far left, individuality is also important, but individuality is a collective, not like your freedoms, but like your freedom to be like everyone else. Like everybody should have this.
I feel like the left protects individual identity and the right protects individual freedom.
Individual interest.
The right.
Isn't therapy though?
They call it freedom,
so individualistic. Like you are taking control of you in a really strong way that, I don't know, it feels like there's a spin there that can make it like exciting for the conservative mind. You know, it's a very like personal gaining of power, not with other people. It's you like defining your own specific, you know, way to win against the world. Not that that's what it is, but.
I feel like there's a layer that we're not necessarily talking about here yet, which is like, it's hard to get someone to go to therapy if they don't want the change within themselves. Because what it is like it's an external projection onto them of you need to change this, where if they don't feel that internally, they won't go because they have a strong enough sense of self and belief in their own ways that they can't be quaked or moved by someone else telling them you're wrong about this. And in fact, that might have them dig their heels in even more to say there's no way I'm going. But if there's a conversation in which they can actually admit that there are things in their life that they want to change, and this is again just like how I would speak to cholerics, which is based on results, to say this is a pathway towards different results that you've stated out loud that you want. And there's no should involved. It's just presenting an option in front of them as a potential way for them to get and create the results that they want.
The thing is, they all want the results. What they don't want, and this is what I believe stops people from going to therapy, is they don't want the part of feeling naked, feeling like all of my darkness is out of the table. And a lot of people, especially if they're melancholic or choleric, might feel like doing that exposes them so much that there's no turning back from that.
Is there a way you can present it, though, that it's like, you can get the results, but not that you're going to lie to them, but like you can get the results, but we're not going to You know, it doesn't mean that you have to completely, you know, bare yourself and just let someone see you at your most vulnerable, even though that may be where it goes. But
that's always where it goes. If it works, it's always where it goes.
But the question is, if they don't want to go there all at once, because the idea of especially if you have, you know, what is it called? Like predisposed notions about what therapy looks like. You've seen it on TV. You've seen it in movies. There's a lot of...
But in movies, all you see is like people crying, people hugging, and people getting no resolution whatsoever.
So if they've got that in their mind, then they think, well, I'm not going to go sit down with somebody who's going to ask me to feel. Like they haven't been to a therapist. That doesn't even start that way. And I think like the first step is always having them in a space that isn't called therapy. Like it's called whatever, call it a consultation, call it an executive coach, you know, those sort of things are way more appealing to someone that's like, well, I don't want to touch, you know, or I don't want to be crying. I don't want to be asked to be sharing my feelings. But if they're like, look, I want to go in here and I want to figure out what's wrong with X, Y, Z, you know.
I feel like there's one thing that's very important there too. And I feel like this is something that affects sanguines and cholerics, which are always the hardest people to get into therapy, sanguines and cholerics, because they're the dominant biotypes. And in most therapeutical processes, the way they're built, especially in most psychoanalytical spaces, you're never told what's really happening. You're never really explained what you're going through. And in some psychological techniques, you're pretty much not supposed to say anything and just listen and allow them to figure out their things with like very, very few questions in different situations. And for someone as dominant as a choleric or a sanguine, that feels like giving your power away to someone else that's not really telling you what's happening. And I feel like that's an important part of our success. Because like we explain to people, we give their power back. We go like, this is what I'm seeing. This is a process that any therapist would be doing with you. And this is the goal that we're thinking of. And we don't want you to lose this part of you, but we definitely want to polish that one. And giving that to people, because what we do is coaching, and giving that to people like gives powerful people certainty, and it gives them their power back, and it gives them a very specific notion of who they are. So I honestly think that the best way to make therapy fashionable is by making it a process that people really understand and that people that go through can really explain. Because if they can explain, I went through this and I recovered this part of me and now I understand my biology, like with the way people that went through BYB talk, like people that go through balancing your biotype with us, they're able to say, I judged myself because of this, but it's just biological and this is psychological, and I understood this part of my system and I understood this about different generations in my family. If people really understood the process in that way, then therapy would be the most fashionable thing, because not going to it pretty much means that you have no idea who you are.
You know what I was just thinking about? It would be so nice if what you do for biotypes and linking people's couples, you could do with people and therapists. Because I've had so many friends be like, yeah, I've like changed therapists so many times, or yeah, I'm with this therapist for 2 years, but I don't really like them. They're not really helping. I wonder, I mean, I'm sure it is, but it's like the way Jordan Peterson connects to a lot of men who probably would not be in therapy. It's because this controlling melancholic or choleric guy is telling them like what to do in a way where they, you know, in their heads, therapists are probably all these like very phlegmatic women, which is what my therapist is. And I love it. But for people that would not respond to that, and they think that's what therapy is, this sort of like this, you know, this maybe this woman trying to like figure you out and like saying things, but not really telling you what they're doing. They're like, no fucking way. But if there's a therapist that speaks to them very directly and strongly and forcefully and kind of reminds them of their like angry father, maybe they'll go, whoa, yeah, I'll fucking listen to that. I mean, it just depends on the person, the biotype. Maybe there should be a way to match your therapist with your biotype and what you need at the time.
It's kind of traumatic compatibility.
It is.
I was just like, as you were saying that, I'm laughing because I've recommended a couple people to my therapist and they don't listen to me. But when the same words come out of my therapist's mouth, to them, like
totally,
it lands with them, and I've just been making the connection.
He's choleric, right?
I'm 90% sure. He's choleric. Yeah,
that's fascinating, because it's true. You do need a little bit of traumatic compatibility, and at the same time, therapy and being like a therapist, a psychologist, a coach is such a soft thing. I mean, it's not rigid. It's not as structured as many people would like. And honestly, I don't really like opening this up, but let's be honest. Most therapists use their tools and techniques filtered through their morality.
Go on. Say more about this.
It's a little bit of a problem, but the thing is, we're all human and we all have a belief system. And the therapist is also a little bit unconscious to their belief system. And I've seen therapists react in very dramatic ways when someone admits to having done something that they honestly believe is morally wrong. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons, and I pride myself on this, one of the reasons I'm able to work with so many different religions, communities, countries, ethnicities, is because I am not moralistic. Like, you know me very well, Roz. You know me very well, Brian.
You want to hypnotize people to fuck them. We know. It's like, you have no morals.
I mean, I've been trying with you for 2 years now. I even made up this podcast just to try it.
Yeah, why hasn't it worked? I'm not receptive to it. I don't know what's going on.
Or at least you think you're not.
Make it fashionable for me, okay?
You still think that hypnotherapist episode ended that? Like, yeah. Wait, what? The episode.
Well, we've gone sufficiently off the rails. You want to bring it back and land that point, Rodrigo?
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
So the point is this. We're human. And even though you're a therapist and you're doing your best, it's really hard not to react to things that you might be still in pain or things that you really don't agree with. And it's not easy to stay neutral. But I mean, I've learned how to stay neutral as much as I can. And it's not easy to... I'll give you an example. It's not easy as a therapist or a coach to be in front of someone that just confessed to you, like I've had in the past, and I have permission to share this. Someone who was in a Mexican cartel and killed a ridiculous amount of women and children and dissolved their bodies in acid. They're called pozoleros in Mexico. They were
very
fashionable
for a while. Yeah, it's hard to keep a straight face when someone says that.
Exactly.
If someone were to admit that's me, it's hard to be like, you know, life is life. You know, people make mistakes. It's very hard to like, that's a skill to be able to like speak to that person.
You need to stay morally, how do I explain this? Like you need to stay morally above the whole thing, not because you're better, just like not judging anything.
Right.
And always keep your mind and your heart on the experience of the human being behind the words that you're listening to.
That's a great way of putting it. It's also why I really like when you say find many teachers, because it's like, I think no matter who you are, one thing that I know is that like, it doesn't matter how smart you are, you are always subject to your own unconscious biases and logical fallacies and cognitive dissonance. All these things that you think that you're better than, you're not. You just have your own way of doing stuff. No matter how much you work on yourself, there's always some there. So it's always nice to have different people that, because the only people that can see through the bullshit of you is other people. Yeah. And you're the only person that can see through the bullshit of other people. So you have to like, it's nice to have people just keeping everyone's bullshit.
Because most people can only see a fraction of your bullshit. Probably what they already broke through and understood in themselves. But that doesn't mean I see the whole of you. That's why I think the best technique to stay morally neutral, as Sony beautifully described it on the chat, the best way to stay morally neutral as a therapist for me is to always tie it back to the experience that this human being is having. Like always tie it back to, I don't care what you did. I don't care where you've been. I care like the experience of yourself that you're having and what you think of yourself and how you treat yourself because of this. And what makes it easy, and it took me years to find this, but what makes it easy for me is thinking, if I support this human being into feeling whole again, and into feeling like they deserve life and they deserve love again, there's no way they'll hurt someone again.
I want to add one beautiful thing. This brings me peace when I think about it, because you know, I go through the world and I unfortunately all I see is the ways in which people can improve, according to Ross, you know?
Yeah.
According to Dale, let's be honest. Honest, who's really in there?
Dale Rosshammer.
So but when I look at people, and especially with all the courses I've taken and you know, things that I've done for myself that I found beneficial, that I've seen other people have breakthroughs in. And I think most people, when they start to go through any sort of personal development work, they get really high on it and they start telling everybody, you should do this, you should do this.
Yes.
And
every time anything works.
Yeah.
What I've found, and the thing that brings me peace, is that people will find their own medicine. and they will choose their own medicine according to where they're at, what they're capable of seeing, what they're willing to go into. And there are some people that just aren't willing or open to the things that I found that have worked for me or that have been good for me. And there's a practice of releasing attachment to them doing it. And if I think of life as a journey and a path, and that, you know, we are here for our own journey and our own experiences, that sometimes breaking through these things is not part of somebody's experience. Sometimes their life experience is to be, from my perspective, trapped in their mindset, trapped in their world, trapped in their fundamentalism. And from my perspective, trapped in their pain, which is hard to allow someone to be in their pain. But allowing them to have sovereignty over themselves and make their own choices of to get help or to work on this or to choose to see this or to choose to try and get out of what I view as their trap is their choice, and it's their life, and I get to respect that. And it's been very difficult for me sometimes, especially with those that I love, but the way that I can continue loving them is by giving them the sovereignty over their own decisions with it. So for anyone that's struggling with someone in their life, I offer that to you because it's brought me peace.
And what Russ just described beautifully is the eternal dilemma of false fires. This is why people sometimes ask you, like, are you sure you're not a false fire? And I don't think that you are, but I think that you're very, I think you have so much mom and you care about people so much that you feel permission to try and offer them exactly what you think would make them grow. And that's usually something that only false fires can do. And false fires always want what's best for the world, but they're so fundamental about what they think the world needs and what they think the world should do that sometimes they feel like they're just oppressing everyone else. And that's the tragic and painful confusion of false fires. Having the world see you as someone who's selfish when you're really just trying to sacrifice everything in your being to make sure that everyone is okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's exhausting.
And it's also that thing where it's like no one ever hears anything until they're ready to hear it. So it's like No matter how much you push that they need something, if someone's not ready for it, you're not going to push that boulder up the hill. They have to do it themselves. And so it's like you can only do so much.
I've never spoken about this, but the truth is that biotypes gave me a huge gift, which is I didn't grow up in a country with a lot of sanguines. My dad does not behave like a sanguine. He behaves like more like a choleric, honestly. And the crazy thing about it is that for years, I kept waiting for that moment in which my brain would stop working in a childish, funny way. Like, when will maturity finally hit me? Like, when will I become melancholic?
Yeah, but I'm waiting for that too, though.
I know, it never happens. But the thing is, I didn't have any examples of how to be a successful, sanguine adult.
Right. Right.
And I kept waiting and waiting for me to stop saying stupid things and to stop making like stupid jokes and to stop laughing about like the most basic things in life. And I thought maturity was going to hit at some point. And embracing my biotype and going like, hey, I can be an adult while still being sanguine. And this is perfectly fine. That completely changed the way I understood myself as an adult, and my success and the way people see me completely shifted after that. Because I stopped seeing myself as someone who was very smart but had all the psychological problems because I was childish, and I embraced my sanguineness, and suddenly it wasn't a problem anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I agree from the I kind of had the opposite journey of you, where I'm like, I have to keep being what sanguine naturally is or no one will like me. Yeah. And it's like, I had to embrace that, just like being a person who can just sort of sit calmly and speak to someone and knowing that I have enough to say and think about things is enough if I don't need to perform. It was almost like I was like, if I don't perform as a silly, dumb guy, no one will think I'm interesting. Which is like the opposite of like you going and be like, how am I going to stop being this silly, dumb guy? The truth is, you're forever a silly, dumb guy.
Yes. And you'll always be a skeleton.
I'm always a fucking like brainy skeleton. I don't want really? Piece of shit.
I'll be your pillow, Brian.
Oh, see, he is trying.
I want to have an episode where we take Brian to like Banana Republic and dress him like a melancholic would dress.
I love everything. I love everything.
And dress him exactly as a as a rich melancholic boy from from the East Coast.
Yeah. Boy King.
Yeah. Like yeah, cuffed sleeves, button down, we'll style his hair, throw on a nice pair of glasses, Dockers, like just the generic melancholic look.
Cool.
I think it'd be really interesting for people to see and be like, yeah, that's what Brian should look like in my mind. Like,
oh yeah. Do you guys ever have like fashion shows at 2 a.m. like in your bedroom?
No.
No.
I do it all the time where I just like mix and match crazy clothes and just like try to figure out like the wildest outfits.
Are you a 14-year-old girl, Brian?
Yeah, a little bit. I also love lip syncing to musicals. It's my favorite. I'm the best at it in the world. But Dania says yes.
Yeah,
to,
Dania
so
agreed way hard. With
oh, it's the best.
Yeah.
Or, like sometimes I'm like, I gotta go to sleep, but look at all these like different outfits that could be matched. I gotta just try. I gotta see what I can make here.
What?
I've never done that in my life.
Oh, it's great. And then if I'm lip syncing to different types of songs, I need to kind of change outfits. It's weird. I'm feeling a lot, but it's like, I like try different types of performances in different looks to see how it like.
Brian, please tell us more.
I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, it's a night of performing for yourself. I do it. I mean, I used to do it all the time.
Do you also have 15-minute intermissions like Dania?
Take 15-minute intermissions. Yes, I go. I let the audience go and get a drink, take a pee break. Yeah, no, it's a whole thing.
I promise.
It's so much fun.
I promise to stop asking you to remember that you had a fashion show every time I hypnotize you at night.
Oh, no. That's what's really going on.
Let's get into another question. This was a great question. Thank you, Reed. It gave us a good conversation. So these next two questions involve false fires. And either Firewaters and Choleric. So before we get into that, I want to make a distinction here about what is a false fire and what is a phlegmatic,
okay.
Right? Because we get this question
people
a
ask
lot,
that a lot, yeah.
A lot, and I just think it would be good to have it on recording and then maybe potentially a clip, Dan, I don't know. So Rodrigo, can you explain the difference between what's a false fire and what's a phlegmatic?
Yes. So phlegmatic is an actual biotype, and we know that phlegmatics have a lot of physical traits, but when it comes to the human experience of being phlegmatic, everything has to do with how they feel life. Everything has to do with their emotions. They're the most emotional human being. They understand people just by looking at them. They understand how people feel just by being a little bit close to them. They're always thinking of what's the best solution for everybody's well-being in the space that they're in. Like, they just really care about that. The problem is that we live in a capitalist world. And this crazy capitalist world that we live in does not value deeply emotional, caring people. That doesn't give you money. That doesn't make you successful in the structures that we usually have. So a lot of them don't want to stay living like that as a pure phlegmatic. Like when we say true phlegmatic, what we mean is someone who is that biotype and has the personality of that biotype, a supporting phlegmatic. That's their nature. But because that's not extremely fashionable, if you had a really bad experience growing up, really trusting your group of friends, for example, and the person that you trusted the most betrayed you, told your secrets to someone else, changed friends. It's hard to stay being a true phlegmatic. It's hard to stay on that supporting personality because it feels like if you act like this, the world is going to destroy you and people are going to hurt you. Other people have the experience of, if, for example, none of your parents are true phlegmatics, none of your siblings are true phlegmatics, that they're going to experience you as way too emotional. They're going to experience you as something being wrong with you because you react emotionally to everything and you get triggered by certain things, even being a small child. And they start sort of rejecting that part of your emotion and thinking that something must be wrong with you. Some of them are sent to therapy when they're five. Like something's wrong with my kid, doctor. They feel too much. They care too much. They cry too much. And then they start becoming a false fire. And we call them a false fire because phlegmatics, their element is water. And the element of their opposite of cholerics and fire waters is fire. So we call them a false fire because they start their personality, their psychology starts being developed like they're more choleric than phlegmatic. They're still phlegmatic human beings, 100%. Their health and everything that's really happening underneath is 100% phlegmatic, but they learn how to act in a fiery, controlling, more independent and dominant way. faith so that they can thrive in life and become successful in this crazy capitalist world without their emotions getting in the way. The thing is, think of it this way. We constantly see scenes of old movies where like someone starts getting emotional and they slap them immediately and go like, put yourself together. Like, what's wrong with you? Don't let your emotions get in the way. Yeah, that's how we taught phlegmatics not to act the way they do. And they start acting like they have to be individualistic and rough with everyone else.
Well said. I want to add just like for a quick summary, phlegmatics is a biology. It's mm-hmm. it's a biotype. So they value relationships, they live in their emotions, and they hide in sadness. False fires are biologically phlegmatic, but the personality that they've created on top of that biology is one that, in a sense, rejects or protects themselves or others from their own emotions. So we call it a false fire because phlegmatics element is water, but they reject the water and they go into a fire position. But since the fire is created with the personality, it is a false fire. The fire mm-hmm. is something that is with your psychology, but mm-hmm. your biology is still very emotional. So there's a dichotomy here of a deeply emotional person who's showing up in a way of non-emotionality with their psychology. That's the big discrepancy there.
That's a good summary.
Thank you. I also want to add in the element of fire water because people get confused with fire water and false fire. Fire water is a biology. Fire water mm-hmm. has all of the power of a choleric, but with more access to emotions than a choleric. So they have both the fire and the water. Fire waters are only female. Yep. They are only female. Cholerics are only male, but they both live in that like genuine biological fire space. So that's the distinction that's important to know here and going into these next couple of questions about the difference between a phlegmatic, which is a biology, a false fire, which is a phlegmatic with a personality of fire, and then a fire water, which is a biology of fire. So hopefully that explains it enough for those of you that are new to this. And also remember, we have a link in the show notes that's an intro to biotypes, which is a 15-minute episode that will give you a little bit more insight into all of this terminology. And of course, we have our fantastic virtual course, Biotype Basics, that goes very deep into this.
If you're listening to this episode and you like this terminology and you want to really get it, just go do Biotype Basics. Like, just go do our virtual workshop about this. You'll get it. It'll make total sense. You'll know what your biotype is and you'll have fun.
I have a question.
Yes.
You're not a listener.
Yeah, but no, I am. I listen to you guys all the fucking time. So we talk about how like the phlegmatics are like the one biotype that people often they reject it because often, you know, like you said, the example, it's a great example of stop being so emotional. That kind of exists in so many, permeates our society in so many ways. However, being kind of like a brainy little nerd is also not in media and in life valued so often.
Of course it is.
Well, it is, but also it's like, I mean, think of like any teen movie. Who are they making fun of the fucking most? It's the skinny melancholic kid with the big glasses.
No, you like just that, feel like that because you're melancholic. Sanguines feel like they make fun of them. Phlegmatics feel like they make fun of them.
Right. So like
and cholerics feel like all the mean people in movies are choleric.
I think there is an unfashionable way that nerds are treated. Like melancholic nerds in media. Why are fake Earths, is that what we are, Earth, not created in the same way?
Let's talk about that because that is something that has shifted recently.
Yes, a lot.
You think so?
Yes, I think this is a 90s problem. I think it is 80s and a 90s problem.
I know it was.
We already had the revenge of the nerds, Brian.
but I want to articulate this.
Did they get
this.
Their revenge?
So if we can go macro with this, Dan put something in the comments that his roommate and him were talking about. But capitalism does not allow us to quantify intangible values. Mm-hmm. So
that's deep.
Yeah, it's big because we talk about emotionality. We talk about the way in which we can, you know, if there's no exchange of dollars or value for me being able to be there for you, unless I become a therapist, you know, or I create a profession around it, there's elements of the melancholic superpower that is intangible. However, a lot of, I think, melancholics that lean into their superpower find their value because in terms of data, organization, ability to perceive things, creativity, those are all things that live
art.
Within the melancholic
Everything
superpower.
Around art is about melancholics.
Yeah. And there is, in certain ways, tangible values that could be quantifiable. And in certain ways, there's not. Because like even if we were to go into art, art is subjective. And I think those areas of your inner world, which are not supported by our current Western system, are areas in which you go, well, let me not necessarily share that. And I'm not talking about you specifically. I'm talking about everyone. The elements that aren't necessarily rewarded by our society on a larger scale, it takes a lot of courage and bravery. And this is what we do in Balancing Your Biotype, is encouraging people to share the parts of themselves that could be valued, yet their current system and belief structure hasn't allowed them to see as valuable. And when you can see that in different areas, those things that you offer are valuable, maybe not in a quiet, quantifiable capitalist way, but to community that will bring you in other results to your life, closeness, intimacy, rewards financially for some people. Mm-hmm. Those are things that are breakthroughs when they happen. So to everyone listening to this, that's fundamental. Go to therapy.
I feel like that monologue was very Dale. There's a lot of big words in that.
Ryan is still offended by Dale.
The difference was that as I was saying this, I know I'm right.
I don't even really know what you said to me, but okay.
Listen, it's okay. It was recorded on the podcast.
Let's make more specific questions.
Brian, it's just you have a hard out at 11:30. We got to hit another question.
But like what Ro was saying, it's like sanguines feel like, God, everyone fucking hates me. I'm so dumb and made fun of and big. Yeah. And melancholic's like, but I'm just like this little piece of shit. And everyone's like jostling me or whatever. Why don't they fakeify themselves the way phlegmatics
do? Because we have something that's still valuable.
So phlegmatics feel like the whole thing. Like yes. The whole thing is just like, get it
because,
out of there.
As Ross said, like the only thing that we value of like the true phlegmatic experience is what they give their friends, what they give their loved ones. Like they're there for them. But unless you're an amazing therapist that's making money off of it, and many phlegmatics feel terrible about making money off of their superpower of connecting with other human beings and don't want to charge for it, that there's no value like that society will give you.
So even growing up in school, it's like, yeah, you're a little nerd, you're made fun of, but you're getting straight A's and the fucking teachers like you and you're going to go to college.
Not only that, like everybody wants to sleep with a skeleton, not a pillow.
I disagree with that. But hold on, let me add this in real quick because
your pillow talking.
We
made female supermodels skeletons.
No, male and male. Okay,
but
so
like,
hold on.
No, I feel like Brian, growing up, the whole thing Brian, was like the look Brian, is like the muscular
Brian,
guy.
I need to share this thing because like there's something that Rodrigo just
South,
said that is like I have a real life example about the idea of. How, if it doesn't exist within a capitalist world, the value of the phlegmatic is difficult to comprehend. My therapist,
it's difficult to monetize.
Let me tell you this. My therapist has told me for years, Ross, go be a therapist. You clearly love this stuff. And I tell him again and again, I do not want to be a therapist. That is not who I want to be. It's not how I want to make a living. Whenever I love getting on the phone with people, especially people that I care about, and talking with them about their problems and being there with them and being there for them. But the idea of taking money for it is so difficult for me because then it becomes something that I do rather than someone that who I am. And there's this concept here of if I can't make money for it in the eyes of other people, or if I'm good at something or if I like doing it, I might as well turn it into some sort of a monetary exchange. But for me, that cheapens it. Like, I love the idea of being there for people, and I hate the thought that people feel like I should be charging for it rather than this is how I participate in society, this is my gift to society, and I don't need to be monetarily compensated back for it because this is my value as a human. And that's the difference, I think, because it's not a business. It's just a way of participating in society.
I totally agree with that, and to add to that, what we do have, Brian, like being completely serious, is that as a melancholic, your biotype is seen as attractive. If you're quiet, a lot of people think that you're just brilliant. Yes, you pay the price of second guessing yourself and having this crazy mind that won't stop, but that can also make you genius and that can also make you extremely creative. As a sanguine, we're big and dumb, but we have the charisma, and we can be funny, and we can be sexy in a way, and we're strong and we're powerful, so we can lead in a way, and we can monetize that, and we can feel it like acknowledged and attractive because of that. As a choleric, even if they tell you that you're toxic masculinity, or as a fire water, they might tell you that you're being too rough and too bossy, but they make shit happen. And we need them to make things happen. And that they're amazing at getting their ducks in a row and making a company work and making a space work. And we love them for that. But in today's society, there's nothing about the phlegmatic pure experience that we make them feel amazing for. And even when we do, we don't choose them because of it. In other words, very few people see the value of marrying a true phlegmatic and what they bring to a home.
In terms of,
they would rather
of,
choose someone else.
Well,
yes, this all makes sense.
Hold on, because I will say that with gender roles and whatnot, like there is appeal to marrying a female pure phlegmatic.
Not really.
Are you kidding me? The idea of having someone there.
Like, really? Why do you think I married a phlegmatic? Because I know this. Like, I know what they bring to the table, and I wanted a phlegmatic. Like, I wanted a phlegmatic false fire. This is why I told my wife I'm going to marry you the day I met her. Because I'm going to marry you the day I met her. Because I needed her to be a false fire. Because if they're not feisty, if there's no battle whatsoever, I'm just not uninterested because of my own paradigm and my own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And on the other side, I needed someone that was motherly in a way that I didn't experience, even though my mom was extremely loving. My mom is pure melancholic. Like, no supporting, no subdominant, no nothing. Like, pure melancholic. And even though she's extremely loving, I could experience other phlegmatic mothers, and I wanted my kids to have that. But not a lot of men have this knowledge. Like, if we're talking about genders, Not a lot of masculine people have awareness about this, and they don't understand how deep and amazing the femininity of phlegmatics is and what they bring to the table. And this is actually something that's happening in oh my God, like the amount of conversations that I've had about this in the past. Why are men not wanting to get married? Because we don't see the value of like the true supporting phlegmatic loving human being at home, creating a home, because that's what they do. Like, if you don't have a phlegmatic with a supporting personality in any generation in your family, then your family is just spread apart. Like, there's no one that becomes home, that becomes that center where everybody gets together. And
or a supporting sanguine.
Or a supporting sanguine. And if you don't see that, if you don't see that as you're building your family, as a provider, why would you get married? Because you're not really getting anything in return for your providing.
It's so wild to me, because Brian had this thing where it was like, what's the sexiest job that you know a woman can have? He's like, preschool teacher. And then people got mad at him. Remember that?
I was with our dear friend Nina and a bunch of very fake, false fiery women, and they got so mad that I said that. I was at a dinner party. And I had to like fight my way out of it. And I think I did pretty well. But they were like, ew, disgusting. And I was like, why? And they were like really offended that I was like, I think that's a really attractive
It's the most motherly energy.
I know. And that's what I said. And they're like, oh, okay. So yeah, just because they have to be like they have to be so maternal. I mean, it was very clear that like the judgment they had for
were they
that.
Saying they have to be so maternal and using it like you're talking about sexuality?
No, I think they were just sort of like, no, the thing you want to value is a career focused, oriented, strong person. Why the fuck would you say someone that's like, so like whatever. She's like, it's just so guy of you to say that. It's like if I said a Wall Street dude is what someone said to me.
Dude,
like, no, it's not.
You should tell them. You should tell them take care of like five toddlers for a day.
Yeah, I know. It's like the hardest thing in the world.
Yeah. Dude, it's like herding cats.
Yeah.
But it was. I had already known enough about biotypes, so I was like, oh, they're just like they're fighting against their own judgments here. Like,
yes.
I just
and also there's nothing wrong with one. Like, what's the sexiest profession for a guy? If they're like Wall Street broker, it's like, yeah, they will like someone that brings in a substantial amount of money, so you have financial security and you don't have to worry about that.
Cocaine addict.
Very much, yeah. Right. That's not as financially stable as cocaine dealer, but you know, I could see why you would think that. So, but either way, like,
sure.
Like, I'm kind of tired of people judging other people's choices about what they find attractive, or like what they want to be. So any guy out there that's like, I want to be in the hustle, I want to be in the grind, like I want to be the provider for my family and have that role, God bless you, go do it. Any woman that wants to do it, God bless you, go do it. And any woman that wants to be in more of a supportive, nurturing, homemaker role, please do not be shamed out of that. And there are plenty of people that are looking for that in a partner. And any men that want to be in that supportive role, there are a lot of women that want to be the earners today. So don't be ashamed of wanting to be that partner or being able to be that partner for someone. Many of the conversations that I have with people is around they're very ambitious women and they also want very ambitious partners. And yeah, that's a difficult situation because you guys are both going to be trying to occupy the same spot in the system. You guys get to figure out how you share those other parts of it if you want to have a family.
People get triggered when someone says, like, you know, so the opposite sex or the sex they're attracted to says that what they're looking for is the whole thing that you're not. Because in your head, you're like, no, you've built this thing of like, no, I've built my version of my mask and what I am, what I bring to the world and what attractiveness is and how people view me. And if you hold on to that too much and someone's like, yeah, I don't need that. I need this type of person. You're like, what? No, but I'm the thing that is needed for things. So it's like, it kind of like, if you are, I think holding on to it too strongly or have an immature relationship to it, then you can get like, you know, you can get upset by other people liking what you just don't have to offer. Whereas when you just sort of like understand like, oh yeah, you just sort of need, yeah, you need a fucking fireman. That's what you need. That's your thing. I get it. I'm not that. You would never be, it would never work with us. I'm not threatened by this. It's just sort of, it's what fits your puzzle piece in a way where I don't.
Let's break down what Brian just opened up because that's brilliant. The yes. problem is that I said, that's not you. Okay, now.
So, do you want to sleep
there is no
yet? Is it working?
There's only okay. ideas.
No, yeah, it's this not is my personal. Trauma. It's not your beliefs. So what I mean is this. Most people look for their partner looking for what complements their mask. They want to complement how they're portrayed. So it's like they look at their mask and they go like, I'm strong, but I'm not that smart. I'm emotional, but I'm not that assertive. So I need someone who's smart and assertive. And then it would be complete. It would be like, you're my better half, meaning me, you complete me. Like I'm half an orange looking for another half orange. But what I mean by it is you should be looking for someone that complements the brokenness of your emotions and that has certain tools that you don't have when it comes to handling life and handling relationships. That's what you want. And that's not going to be as exciting for your personality. I'm actually revealing one of my secrets of falling in love.
I was about to say, this is coming up or already came up yesterday yeah. at the workshop, yeah. which you all went to. Yeah. Absolutely.
In other words, stop thinking of what complements your image and how you want to be portrayed and start thinking about someone that has the emotional and cognitive abilities that you don't.
Yep. Jasmine says, regarding what we were talking about earlier, like that's all the drama on India matchmaking, which is fake fires who want fake fires.
Yes.
Because the masks that's look death. Really good, but they don't work together like
that.
The
masks look good because if you just value ambition and like, what is it that attracts a fake fire to a fake fire?
The masks look really good because they agree on everything. They hate the same right. types of things. They value the same types of things. They fight the same type of people. Like imagine two fake fires on a date going like, oh, my mom wants me to be blah, blah, blah. And the other one, I know my dad wants me to be blah, blah, blah. And my friends think that I should blah, blah, blah. Oh, my friends think that I should blah, blah, blah too. Let's fight everyone together. And after a couple of months, of course, they hate each other.
Sounds exhausting.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yep. It is.
Okay, I'm going to throw throw this in here because we're kind of on the path
wait,
of it.
Wait, read that comment. Everyone sucks. Let's kiss.
Oh, that's my perfect, God. Jasmine. That needs to go on some merch. Everyone sucks. Let's kiss. Okay, so this comes from one of our patrons who's a false fire who wants to know how to get along with his wife who he believes is a firewater. So in that sort of a combination. We've got a masculine partner as the false fire, and we've got the feminine partner as the fire water.
Okay.
What do we do?
What's the question again? Sorry.
He wants to know how can he get along with his wife?
Oh God.
I know. But I want to add a caveat to this.
That's the whole answer. Oh God. Next.
Well, this is a difficult combination, especially because we don't know the traumatic compatibility that brought this relationship together. We don't know the dynamic. We don't know the personalities of these two. But
I agree with Teresa. Yeah. How the hell did that happen?
Here would be my assumption of a false fire coming together with a fire water is that a fire water would win enough fights over the false fire, but the false fire would still feel powerful enough in certain ways to be able to fall in love with the image. And there's probably some traumatic compatibility about being overrun and overpowered.
Yeah.
That keeps that glue sticking together. But if there's over time, I could see how that would get incredibly exhausting of having to battle every single time for control. If she is a firewater, she's biologically stronger than you, is that's an exercise in ego. So I feel like the answer there is to practice loving surrender.
Well, there's a couple of things. First, the only thing that's different about this relationship is that she is a firewater, because we're actually kind of used to seeing relationships between a choleric man and a false fire woman.
Which those work.
The beginning they do. And they can work for a long time. It depends on certain things. But usually what happens in relationships like that is that the choleric, in this case the firewater, is amazed that they met someone that's as strong as them, portrays himself in a very similar way to them, seems to understand them, and values results just like them. So for the fiery person, for the choleric or the fire water in this situation, this is amazing. At the very beginning, false fires are really good at holding their ground, standing there and not moving and showing they really care about results and they don't feel anything and they're fine. The problem is that eventually the false fire will need some emotional support, and the false fire will need a soft place to fall. And we know that cholerics in particular are not amazing at that. And we know that fire waters are a little bit better than cholerics, but far away from phlegmatics. So the huge problem there is always when the false fire needs the emotional protection and the emotional understanding, and the other person might not have access to that way of being. That will always be the problem. And the false fire needs to guide them through into the connection to their emotions in order to have someone at home that can be a space for them. And that means absolute surrender and teaching them how to love and how to care. And that is not something that most false fires are amazing
at. Oh, no way. He's here. Oscar, if you want to come on. Oh, you know what? Shoot. Okay. We're going to bring on Oscar. We're going to throw up the patron wall right here. So if you guys want to hear this interview to actually see what is going on in this relationship, go to patreon.com/RGP development for the full version of this episode. Oscar, come on. Let's talk about this.
Want more Biotypical? Well, good news. There's a longer version of this episode available at patreon.com/RGP development. There, you'll also be able to find ways to get on the podcast yourself, ask questions, as well as watch a live taping remotely. Thank you so much for supporting the podcast and subscribing. Remember to rate this 5 stars wherever you're listening to it, and we'll see you next time.